This is Port of Harlem Talk Radio. This is Port of Harlem Talk Radio, and I'm your host of this show and also publisher of Port of Harlem Magazine at portofharlem.net. You can listen via the internet or by dialing 516-531-9500. And if you are on the phone and want to ask a question, you can press 1 at any time and alert me that you have a question. This please be in a quiet place. 1. Hear this and episodes at any time. Visit portofharlem.net and click POH Talk Radio from the menu. And we're also available on about 7 podcast platforms. And lastly, We Talk Production sponsors Port of Harlem Talk Radio. Today, our guest again, and I say again because he's been here before, historian C.R. Gibbs, and he's back to share the history of racial dog whistles in America, including Birth of a Nation, states' rights, busing, welfare, disannexation. I should have practiced saying that word. Willie Horton, Defund the Police, CRT, and Let's Go Brandon. They're all racial dog whistles used to signal whites, some blacks, and some others, that they should fear the children of the formerly enslaved Africans. For background information, you can visit portofharlem.net and see the article, Yunkin, Virginia, and the New Dog Whistles, 3 reports. So welcome, CR.
Very happy to be here, Brother Wayne.
Yeah, let's go have an open discussion because, you know, I have never read a book on this subject. I haven't seen an article on this subject. But I'm glad that you know about this issue because it keeps running up now, even though it hasn't got as much attention as I would like to see. But let me first ask you, would it be fair for me to think that these dog whistles started during the forming of the country and intensified when black men won the right to vote and started holding public office in 1870?
Well, let me just begin by saying what a dog whistle is. And in 1876, Sir Francis Galton, who was an English scientist, invented what we know as the Galton whistle. And he did it, he was testing hearing of animals and humans and found out that there were a number of, once you got above, I think it's 14,000, 18,000 kilohertz, humans couldn't hear it, but other creatures could hear when he blew his whistle. And that took him into more and more research, and he found that dogs picked it up right away. But, I mean, cats, dolphins, the more animals he tested, you know, the higher frequencies, the more other animals could hear. While, for example, sheep and people were rather low on the hearing frequency scale. So this comes, the political dog whistle, as opposed to the original dog whistle, both come out of a situation where some creatures can hear a signal, and for some, if it's pitched at a higher frequency, it only relates to those people that can hear it. And this is what has brought us to the use of the term dog whistle as a coded message in which you want to reach a very small segment of the population, and you're only speaking to a small segment of the population, and it goes, if you will, over the head of everybody else. Now these kinds
that.
Of
I appreciate that perspective, but go ahead.
Yeah, but so we get the classic dog whistle in 1876, the Dalton whistle, but then we come down to, which only means that we had a term from about that time, but we had a practice that preceded the term, and there were a plethora of coded words to describe black people going to the beginning of this country, describing us as filled with crime and impulses. Even our color was used against us, and we now know that the use of black as a bad color precedes us into the European consciousness and goes back at least to Shakespearean times, if not medieval times. So when people talked about blackness as something bad, something evil, that takes us clean before the founding of America and back to the kinds of inner feelings about the color black as a threat, as a disease, and takes us again back into, well, into European medieval history. So we've been the subjects of various kinds of coded descriptions from color, from our similarities, supposed similarities to animals, apes, and people have used those quote-unquote dog whistles, again, even before the invention of the real Galton whistle. Again, back before there was an America, there were ways to describe black people negatively, and they were used by Europeans.
Okay, but to be fair, though, you answered my question that it happens way before the start of the country.
Yes.
But the other part of that question was, did it intensify, in your opinion, at least, around 1870 when black men got the right to vote and therefore became more of a threat that they could become political leaders?
There were predictions that if you get, so even before we go to Reconstruction, to the former years of Reconstruction, there were people who predicted every time black people had a step forward, there were people who predicted catastrophic comings. For example, when Toussaint Louverture was fighting for freedom at the end of slavery in Haiti, people predicted that basically, you know, that would be the deluge, that would be everything of goodness would be swept away and the entire island would be destroyed once black folk got in charge. And so every time we look at any kind of advancement by people of African descent anywhere in the world, every step forward, every political advancement, there are people who will use messages, sometimes coded and sometimes straight out and plain, to predict a calamity if black folks actually get a step up.
Oh, I hear you very well. But did it intensify in this country around 1870?
Absolutely. Again, consistent with the prior history of these kinds of descriptions occurring anytime black people got ahead. If we confine ourselves to the United States, there were already a number of bad terms, euphemisms, if you wish to call them that, for black people once slavery was over. When black people were on the cusp of great change and about to get the vote, about to take steps toward equality in law, if not in fact, white America went crazy.
Yeah.
And that's what we see today.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts because, see, lots of times, personally, I get uptight whenever I see, you know, black people make some step of progress, and all of a sudden there's this great rush to make all these negative comments, and you see some black people falling right into it and participating. And I'm like, okay, we should learn by now that that some negativity will come from this. And so you should be ready to defend it as opposed to even evaluate whether it's right or wrong because you know what's coming in the first place. But I sometimes don't think that as a group that blacks always realize what you just said, that this is something that's a pattern and it's an expected pattern.
Oh, no, because I just read about some young black Trumpites who clearly are suffering from the disease of galloping amnesia. Yes, they have a right to support any political figure that they want to, but in terms of being able to describe and extend their knowledge of African American history, it showed that they were lacking in some fundamental information. And I would say that because we have not learned the lessons of history. In fact, oftentimes, just because we don't know the lessons of history, if we think these harried school systems are going to give it to us, no. And the churches don't appear to be eager to retrace some of the painful steps in our history as well. So we have to go back and repeat over and over and over again lessons that should be well known to us about the cost and feedback about any advancement by black people.
So in fairness, too, now, it happens to other groups of people, not just to black people. Is that correct?
Oh, sure. I mean, a current dog whistle, one that's been used with great success, is immigration. Now, we're not talking about immigration of Europeans. We're talking about primarily the immigration of Spanish-speaking folk from, if you will, south of the American border.
Yeah,
so immigration is one that we can trace back all the way to Nixon and in fact, beyond, as well as crime. Crime is a dog whistle for people of color.
Right.
And you don't even have to get fancy with it. When you say crime, you know, folks know you ain't talking about white people in the suburbs.
Right. You're not talking about the guy named Kyle Rittenhouse or anybody of his ilk.
No, but there's a wonderful story about the Urban Dictionary says that Sarah Palin used a political dog whistle when she said, "We grow good people in our small towns with honesty, sincerity, and dignity." Well, almost anybody that heard, anybody that understood it in the audience. Well, and let me just finish what she said. When she said, subtlety and dignity, she said, "We don't want people who have Muslim names and work in cities." And people understood that she meant, again, white folk in the suburbs, not in the cities, not named Obama, because they are dangerous.
Exactly. And the reason I brought up the part, I like the part where you mentioned about immigration. The reason I wanted to bring it up again is that sometimes I think even American blacks tend to forget that that the dog whistle immigration may most of the time be geared toward browner people, people from Central and Latin America, but it's targeted toward brown and black people, and that so many of the immigration laws are anti-African. And so we're lumped in together with them, and we saw that when we saw the Haitians being sent back.
And their bodies washed up on the shores of South Florida during the Carter administration. But it always has, and the dialogue, of course, has degenerated so much so that now the politics and the discourse around politics has legitimized and unleashed overt racist ideology. So, but dog whistles have been used. If we go back to Nixon and his Southern strategy, if we go back to the war on crime, again, people perceived that they were talking about some people, but not all Americans. And the same is true today, 40 years later, when we talk about critical race theory in Virginia. I mean, even though it's never been taught in public schools in Virginia, the truth of the matter isn't concerned. It is the ability to stoke people's fear. I talked to a friend of mine in Virginia. He wanted, "Man, what's going on?" I said, "If you stoke a fire long enough, the flames will rise up." That's the thing. If you put enough wood on the fire, it ain't going down. It's going up. And so the kindling and the from kindling to kerosene, when you set these flames going, it only adds to the heat. It only makes people that much more fearful. And fear is what motivates so much of American politics. 100 years ago, 200 years ago, or even today.
Exactly. And the fear part is what cracks me up, because it's almost like someone can be very rational one second. They hear a dog whistle and they go berserk.
Dog whistles hit us on, and again, remember the thing about it, going back to Galton's whistle, is you can't see it, but it hear it, but you know it's there. In our case, we hear it and we understand. Nobody has to send us 35-page pamphlet, we hear it. It strikes us on an almost molecular level, and we automatically know what the deal is. I mean,
it's like a stereo, or you automatically know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big signal.
I mean, when Sir Francis Galton tested the dog whistle, he knew that, again, humans and sheep and, you know, some other creatures, they could not hear the whistle. But he watched dogs' ears prick up and in some cases start barking. So he knew he was communicating with some of God's creatures, but not all of God's creatures. And this is one of the pernicious things about dog whistles, is if you're not paying attention, folks will be talking about you right to your face, and you don't know.
Well, the first time that I was made aware of a dog whistle was, I believe I was in college, and for some reason we learned about the movie Birth of a Nation, and I might have seen it for the first time then, or might have seen maybe clips of it, but I did watch it at least once. And you want to talk about that for a bit?
Sure. It's in one of my lectures, so yeah. I mean, I'm certainly happy to talk about it.
And the significance of it. Go ahead.
Well, we used to say that Birth of a Nation was the first movie shown at the White House. We know that that's not exactly true, but it was one of the first motion pictures shown at the White House. And in the racism that is crystal clear in Birth of a Nation, which for those who might not be familiar with it, basically shows how the only saving force in the South was the Ku Klux Klan. And it tells the story of two families, the Northern Stoneman family and the Southern Cameron family, and even has a scene where, rather than even be touched by a black man who is actually a white actor in blackface, the famous actress Lillian Gish is shown in the movie jumping off a cliff. So nothing can be worse, nothing, than having the Negro character touch you. Black politicians in Birth of a Nation are shown with their feet up, got their shoes off, drinking liquor in the state house, and so when you look at that film and The Poison and understand that it was only with great effort that the NAACP was able to get it banned in about 5 states and 19 cities, it influenced American politics. It led to an increase in fact, some historians dated to a second rise of the Ku Klux Klan. And when Ronald Reagan was interviewed, he said he and his brother Moon, that would be his brother Neil, said they were anxious to see it because they had heard so much about it. Not only was it endorsed by the President of the United States, but the most racist film ever made was, if you will, codified by Woodrow Wilson by saying, he said it was like writing history with lightning. His one regret was that it was all so true. But he took it a step further. There are quotes from one of his history books that helped to delineate the movement of what's going on in the film. I mean, that's an extraordinary endorsement and we're talking about 1915, that's an extraordinary endorsement by a president of the United States. So that when he blamed black folk, when he talked about, you know, the need to control them, they have the quote from one of his books, and I believe his name, but I know that they have the quotes from his books, and it's an extraordinary move. And finally, I'll say, I was speaking in the horse country in Upper Virginia, near Middleburg, and you know I was telling the people about how they were still using Birth of a Nation as a recruiting tool for the Klan.
to this day.
In today's times, and as far as I know, they still are.
And so let's move forward to the phrase, let's go, Brandon.
Well,
but long enough, I didn't talk about someone named Brandon, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, it does. I mean, when we look at the complex history, it takes a little bit of explanation, but it winds up pretty much like this. It's a crude stand-in for F. Joe Biden. And what happened is it came out of a trackside interview conducted by an NBC sports reporter with a NASCAR driver whose name was Brandon Brown, and after he won a race. And the crowd was chanting, Joe Biden, F Joe Biden, but the reporter heard the chant as, let's go Brandon, after the name of the winning NASCAR driver,
right,
and wrongly said on the air that the crowd was showing its support for the driver. And from this, we get one of the most popular, at least at this present time, and poisonous dog whistles. And they have sold shirts. There's even a guy who will make pizzas with the initials, let's go Brandon, on it. I mean, he'll even do a pizza with F Biden, F. Joe Biden as well. Now, recently he said he would do an anti-Trump pizza if people were willing to pay him. But it shows you it's penetrated into the halls of Congress. It's everywhere. People are putting it on their clothing. So it's a reminder that the age of the modern dog whistle is still with us and will likely be here for a while. I mean, attempts by the Democrats to come back with something like thank you, Joe Biden, seem weak and disconnected. But let's go, Brandon. Also, to give you an example, there was a boat race in Yorktown, Virginia, just the other day, and the let's go, Brandon boat won the Yorktown boat decorations parade. And then it was stripped of it sometime later. It initially won the race. And
right.
Now we have pushback. NASCAR, the president of NASCAR says, I don't really care for the let's go Brandon thing, you know, and other organizations have come out against it. But it is one that is all current, whatever you want to call it, and just as poisonous as anything its ancestors represented 60 years ago.
Yeah, I know that the point of it is to create fear. So I'm sure that it'd be kind of hard for black folks to create the opposite. But are there dog whistles that are used against whites you could think of?
Yeah, the conservatives claim that one that's been used against them is the basket of deplorables. But, I mean, let's face it. I mean, Hillary Clinton saying basket of deplorables, it never gained traction. It never gained traction. And that's what happened with most of the ones that the right feels are, you know, set against them, is they don't have the currency that something like Let's Go Brandon has, or, for that matter, even critical race theory.
But I don't know if I may, because of where I sit, but I don't see basket of deplorables having a fear factor, or at least not a strong one.
No, and that's part of what – I mean, there have been folks who said we need to come out stronger against dog whistles like Let's Go Brandon, you know, or crime or immigration, you know, but that just had Democratic leadership has been extremely slow to respond to those concerns. And so in the battle of public discourse, political discourse, we're losing that game hands down.
So let me be clear again, just to get your point, just to get your thought. So for instance, if someone said that I was part of the basket of deplorable, the basket of deplorables, or I don't know what the male term for Becky, or if I was Becky, I mean, I see those are descriptions of a type of a person, not necessarily that I'm going to be threatened by them.
No, insulted perhaps, but not threatened. But
yeah,
even
that's
so.
My point. Thank you. Threatened.
Yeah.
I won't feel threatened. I will feel like I've just been stereotyped or put into a descriptive box, but not
right.
Something
that's and that's the other part. On one end of the dog whistle, you can stoke fear, and on the other end, well, man, I've just been insulted. And so when we talk about something that sounds awfully weak nowadays, basket of deplorables, I mean, where are you going to go with that? But it is, you know, there are people on the right that felt definitely insulted as when people complained about their addiction to guns and, you know, and that sort of thing, that their way of life was criticized and demeaned.
Well, I can get their point as far as being insulted. We have one person online. If they have a question, they can press 1. I believe that the machine will show me or the board will show me that you have a question, and then I'll bring you on to see if you have a question for CR. You just need to press 1.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, the other dog whistle that I grew up with, I mean, after I learned what dog whistles were, I began to understand the word disannexion, maybe mispronounce the word again, became a threatening word because being in Gary, the white sections of the city decided they wanted to disannex from Gary. And now I see that even the whiter section of Atlanta wants to do likewise. And that seems to be a pattern that whenever blacks take over a tax jurisdiction, that somehow the white section believes that the blacks somehow are ruining their or wasting their money. And the only way to get away from them is to break away from them.
Yeah, this annexation is an old ploy. I mean, trust me, the nation's capital, people are still talking about, you know, whether or not they can get their part of D.C. to go back to Maryland. So ever since Virginia took its part of D.C. back, there have been people who wanted to say, well, can't the rest of D.C. go to Maryland? They don't seem to understand. Maryland, for the most part, is in no hurry to get that part of D.C. back that they originally donated to be part of the nation's capital.
Right.
And Virginia definitely is not in any hurry. I had a guy ask me about that, and he said, well, have there been studies on how it would be if Alexandria and Arlington came back into a district? I said it'd be a financial windfall and an intellectual windfall, not because one group or another is smarter, but because the heart of the DMV would be better off in terms of salaries, indeed, perhaps even in terms of standards of living, if the original district from 1800 to 1846 was allowed to come back into being. But there doesn't appear to be. With the current battle for statehood, I don't think there's a concomitant move for reversing annexation in the nation's capital.
Yes. So the dog whistles will continue. And my only hope that now that listeners are more informed about them and the history of them, and I like the story that you brought in about the guy who did the scientific studies, because it gave me at least a larger view of the whole issue of dog whistles. I hope that people are more aware of them and just become less tolerant of them in the first place, because I know what really it irks me when I see some of the Congress people, in the Senate in particular, I forgot his name, Tom Cotton in particular, he seems to love to use dog whistles.
They do work. When people say, man, why do we have to? Because they work. they work. They continue to work. You say, why are they so mean and so nasty? Why do they use coded messages? Because
they work.
Because they work. That's right.
They
people
work.
Respond to them. Like I say, when Francis Galton invented the dog whistle, and he would see the dog's ears shoot up, he knew he was getting, that they were hearing what he was blowing. Today,
well,
we have a human component of that.
But we're going to end this 30-minute show, and I'll remind people that if you want to know when Sierra is going to have the next online lecture or his in-person lecture, I know you're having some small gatherings and COVID-safe gatherings in Northeast at the library. I forgot which one it's called, the library in Northeast.
The Woodridge Library, and I'll be doing some Zoom for the Charles County Library System early next year.
So on Porter Collins' page, you can just Google C.R. Gibbs, and when you go to the page with his picture right on the front, you'll see his upcoming lectures, and plus you can see the past lectures and the past articles in Porter Harlem, and there's links to Zoom conferences and Zoom lectures, etc. So you can get everything you want right there. And sometimes on our Facebook page, because you know Facebook controls what you see too often, too much, but you will see announcements there too. So CR, we got a new going out music. I'm gonna let you go out on the music. So you got
all right.
Well, it's only appropriate for you to be the first person to use it. So here we go.
I am honored, sir. Thank you, Brother Wayne.
All right. So what's your last message?
Keep studying and look for the origin of the political dog whistles and don't respond.
Okay. Thanks so much. And talk to you soon.
Thank you, bro.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care.
Uh-huh.